Hopefully you're well. Hopefully your property investment journey is going well in 2024. And well, hopefully we got a huge response to our last podcast, Lisa, with Brendan Allen. But I think we may have stretched even further. Who have we got this month, Lisa?
So this month we have a man called Kevin McDonnell. He's the fella I followed over from Ireland over to the UK to do my property training because I like the Irish accent. So I followed him over. So I learn everything no money down with this man, Kevin McDonnell.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, guys. Yeah, great to be on. And yeah, good to be doing a podcast back in Ireland as well. And I know it's worldwide, but it's kind of back in Ireland. So yeah, great to have you on. And great to catch up again with Lisa as well and to meet you, Pork.
Lovely to meet you, Kevin. Obviously, have watched a lot of your content, heard a lot about you. But suppose the one factor is that the one thing I can't help you out with is Mayo, unfortunately, at the minute. We will do our best. We will try our best for you.
We're just giving everybody else a chance, that's all.
But Kevin, suppose for people that don't know you, or maybe the first time of hearing myself and Lisa, do know you. We're very familiar with you, but some of our listeners who don't know who Kevin McDonnell is, maybe give us a quick intro.
Oh, wow. From Mayo, youngest of eight kids, went to England 2002. So what, 22 years ago now? And just did normal job working in a construction company in an office job, having finished at IT Sligo, and tried property, messed it all up, bought off plan abroad like many of the Irish did in the 2003, 2004, 2005 time. Lost money I didn't have, ended up in a big debt. And then I quit property in 2007 till about 2012. And then I realized that actually it wasn't really that property was bad, but more that I was just bad at it. And I decided to learn how to do property correctly. So I got myself trained and mentored and whatever. And then since 2013, probably the last 11 years, I've built up a property portfolio of 123 properties by next Friday, hopefully, because there's one about to complete. We've got about 350 tenants. I've got 15 odd different businesses around property investing now. A large portfolio, a lot of tenants, coach and mentor a lot of people. Lisa came over from Ireland a few years ago to meet me. So had a little part in helping her build what she's built in Ireland. But she's done all the work. I just give her a little bit of information. I wrote a book, Amazon bestselling, No Money Down, in 2018, which kind of blew me up. And I've become known in the last sort of 3 or 4 years as the leading expert in the UK on creative property. And the good news for anyone listening to this in Ireland is the techniques work everywhere. Because they're not strategy, they're techniques. So they kind of work everywhere. If there's property, it'll work where you are.
Yeah, amazing. Definitely. I've used some of those, yeah. So Kevin, just give us a bit of, so you work with PPN, or sorry, Progressive Property.
Yeah.
And you train a load of people, and you do No Money Down. So just tell us a little bit about some of the strategies that you teach.
Yeah. So Progressive Property, I went to them in 2013 as a student, and then 2017, when I built my business up, they asked me if I'd start teaching people what I was doing, because I started doing stuff that they didn't teach me, and that was a bit more creative. And I had to get very creative because I had no money. And I call it No Money Down, but actually it's creative property investing. The concept of No Money Down is buying property without money that you've earned in a job. So a lot of people on social media especially go, oh, you can't do No Money Down. And the irony is that they can't do their money down. Most people can't do property with their own money. So then they think, I can't do property. But if you stop looking internally and look externally, look at the world, the reality is the governments of the world printed trillions of pounds in the last few years, especially during the lockdown, trillions and trillions of pounds. And there's more money on the planet than there's ever been. Yet most people are poorer. And the reason they're poorer is simple. It's because they're focused on earned income in a job, pay rises, bonuses, overtime. And you will never, if you do the maths on your annual salary and what you take home and what you can save after all your expenses, it is impossible. I challenge you. It's impossible to become wealthy from earning money from a job. So that means the only way to become wealthy is none of your earned money down. It's looking externally and getting money elsewhere. And quite often it's joint venture finance, private investor finance, or actually the money's in the house. So the house I've just moved into, my family home, I've just moved to literally a week and a half ago. This was funded by the seller. So the seller funded my purchase, because some people need some money now. Some people need all their money now. And some people need none of their money now. They just want their price. So no money down is a concept. It's a way of life of how you structure deals. And there's loads of different techniques, lease options, exchange delayed completions, assisted sales, vendor finance, or seller financing, the way I did this one, and loads of different ways you can do property. And the reality is, if anybody wants to build a big property business, they are never going to do it with earned money and a job. They will only do it by thinking differently. And that's what the concept of no money down is all about.
So say, for example, then, Kevin, vendor finance. We heard this term. Some people haven't heard this term. So give us an example. Maybe if you could put some figures on it.
All right. Okay. So let's say I'm going to buy your office, because your office looks – actually, no. Park's office looks way better than your office at the moment. But I think his might be a picture. No. So if I was going to buy your office, your house, Lisa, and your house is for sale and I want to buy your house, but I don't have any money. So what do? We go to the bank to borrow money to buy your house. Well, the reality is the bank don't have the money that they're lending you, because banks borrow the money from the markets. They don't actually hold the money. And if a bank goes bust, and the whole thing's a scam, the whole system, because if a bank goes bust, you don't get your money back over a certain amount. You can have a certain amount of savings that's protected, and then after that, you don't get your money back. So not all your money's protected. So you're saving your money in a bank, but the bank don't have your money. And then you're borrowing money from the bank to buy a house. So you might put down 10, 20% deposit, your money, that you had held in a bank that didn't have your money, if you stay with me. And then you're borrowing 80-odd percent or 90% on a mortgage from a bank who doesn't have the money, because they don't have the money to lend you. They don't even have your money. The money is actually in the bricks and mortar. This is where money is. Right here in property, it's in bricks and mortar. And so I got to buy your house, Lisa. I could go to a bank, AIB, Bank of Ireland, whatever other bank, and I go borrow money and they lend me money to buy your house. Or what I could do is I could find somebody like Porrick, who's a high net worth individual, got lots of money. By the way, I'm not just saying this as an example. For anybody listening, Porrick is minted. So
I just want to clarify, I am not minted. I don't have. And how's you? 126?
So 123, but. So, Porrick, let's say Porrick's a high net worth individual. He's got money. He's got businesses. He's got money, whatever it may be. He's got this money sitting there. If Porrick has got a lot of money sitting in the bank, that money could be lost completely if the banks go bust. Ask people in Cyprus from 2008 who lost all the money when the banks were bust. People that had money in England, in Northern Rock, lost all their money when Northern Rock went bust. So Porrick's got this money in the bank. He's got a bigger problem than you have if you've got no money, because he's got to get this money moving, except he's a busy professional, because people have time. Some people don't have the time. Some people have money. Some people don't have the money, and anybody can gain the knowledge. So you can learn about how to do property, use your time, and then access Porrick's money. So I could go to the institution, AIB, Bank of Ireland, get money to buy Lisa's house. Or I could go to Porrick and I could borrow the money off Porrick. Okay. So I could say, Porrick, will you lend me 200 grand, 300 grand, whatever it is, to buy Lisa's house, and I'll pay you interest on that money. That's called private investor finance. Or I might joint venture with Porrick, where me and Porrick buy the deal together. So I've put in my time and knowledge to find the house, and Porrick puts his money in, and then we do a refurbishment, we get him his money back out of the deal, and we share 50-50 share of the deal and share the cash flow. But actually, I'll never earn the money to buy the house. I could borrow it off the bank, but they won't lend all the money. They'll only lend so much, and I need a deposit. I could borrow all of it off Porrick, or I could joint venture with him. But the reality is, most people never thought about asking Lisa, who's selling the house, if she needed the money from her house. See, traditional thinking says everybody's trying to sell to buy, but the couple moving abroad might not need to sell to buy. The person who just inherited a house from great Uncle Bob might not need to sell to buy. The investor selling a portfolio lives in another house. He doesn't need to sell to buy. the couple who are moving in together, they're both homeowners. They move in together. They've got a spare house. They don't want to be a landlord. They don't want to be investors. They don't need to sell to buy. What they want, a person been repossessed, never wants to buy again. What they want is their asking price, or they want the amount of money they want. They don't want a silly low offer. They want their price. So what I do is I go to Lisa and I say, listen, I know you want 300 grand for your house. I'll give you, I can give you now 225. However, I don't want to. I prefer to give you the whole 300. Would you be willing to wait for some of the money? I'll give you 225 now, or I'll give you the 300 if you're willing to wait. Now, Lisa might have a property where her mortgage is 280 on a 300 grand house. She can't wait. There's not enough in it. But she might have no mortgage. If Lisa's got no mortgage or even a 100 grand mortgage, when she sells this 300 grand house, she's got a 100 grand mortgage. She's got 200 grand of equity. But what's she going to do with that 200 grand? Leave it in the bank and make 0.0% interest on it? Or she could lend it to me. Because why do I have to borrow the money off Porik to buy Lisa's house when I could borrow the money off Lisa to buy Lisa's house? And then Lisa lends the money to me at maybe 5, 6, 7% interest. And Lisa becomes my bank. The world has moved on from years ago when you just had to be getting money off a bank. We've got cryptocurrencies. We've got loads of different stuff. Private investor finance is a big thing. And many people want to get a better return on their money. So vendor finance, that was a long example of the difference between just normally buying, buying off a loan from Porik, or just getting Lisa to loan me the money. The seller could lend you the money, seller financing.
So Kevin, right, in that example, that's a good example. So in that example, is Kevin now the owner and Lisa is the first charge owner?
Yeah. So I now own the house and Lisa either has a first charge or maybe a second charge. It could be a personal guarantee. Obviously, the worst secure, the first charge is the most secure. If I don't pay you your interest and your loan back, you take the house off me. Second charge is the second most secure. And a personal guarantee, I kind of call those toilet paper. Because what's the point in having a personal guarantee of somebody who's broke? Because they can't guarantee it. So, but it could be on a handshake. It's whatever the vendor wants to do. I would never lend money without a first charge. I would borrow it on a handshake because I trust myself to pay it back. So it depends which side of the fence you are. But I would never lend it.
Yeah. We were just having a chat before you came on, and it's very interesting the way you give the scenario there of the three of us coming together. But obviously vendor finance, it's been around for quite some time. But the next question is I suppose finding those, I suppose one time you explained the tactic really, really well. But I'm damn sure there's a lot more questions.
How do you find the deal?
that's the next question everybody's looking for. So, you know, and it is such a good analogy now at the minute, because there is, say, for example, someone living in a bigger house who wants to downscale, but there's different aspects there. So we'll take the first question is, how do we find them type of deals, Kevin?
This is great. I went on social media a while back, and a guy came on in Bournemouth in the south of England, and he said, lease option is another technique. And he was talking about a lease option. A lease option is where you take over somebody else's mortgage. So the scenario I just talked about, vendor finance, I'm actually buying Lisa's house and she's lending me the money. A lease option is where you take over somebody else's debt. And we already understand this because you can lease a car. Yeah, you pay an upfront payment of £1 or £1,000. You pay a monthly payment every month, and then you pay a final balloon payment. And we understand leasing cars and sofas and televisions and microwaves and washing machines. But why not a house? Because the government never told us we could do that, because the system doesn't teach you in school. But actually, you could lease a house on a lease option, and people go, well, but you don't own it. Well, if you buy it, you don't own it, because the bank have a mortgage on it. So why do I have to take out my own mortgage when I could control somebody else's mortgage and take on theirs? So this guy in Bournemouth says, I heard this Kevin McDonald talking about these lease options. I can't find any of them advertised in Bournemouth. You won't see a lease option advertised. You won't see a vendor finance advertised. You won't see an assisted sale or an exchange with delayed completion or any of these techniques and the names I've given them and the world has given them advertised. They're disguised as a house for sale. You go on daft.ie or Rightmove here in the UK and you see a house for sale. You go to that property. Your strategy might be single let, buy to let. Your strategy is multiple. That's your strategy. But the technique you use to acquire the house is I can buy it with cash. I can buy it on a mortgage. I could get the vendor to fund my purchase. I could do a lease option. You use a technique to acquire the property. So it's like a plumber going into a house to fix a leaky tap and they bring a lump hammer. I'm trying to buy the house cheap. All I do is I go in to meet a vendor who's looking to sell a house. I have a conversation with them. Where are you moving? Why are you selling? How soon do you need to move? And I paint a picture for the person of their scenario, their situation. And then we solve their problem. And solving their problem could be that they need a quick sale and they need to sell it cheap. Solve their problem, maybe they need all their money, but they're willing to wait. Solve their problem, maybe they need a little bit of their money, but they'll wait for some of it. Or their house might be really run down, so we can come in and paint it. We can do it up and sell it with them at a higher value so I can make money. It's called an assisted sale, where we'll assist them in the sale of their house. So all of these are techniques where we basically sit with the owner, figure out the situation, get an understanding of the situation, and pick the right tool from the toolbox to solve the problem. But most people are going in to try and buy a house thinking, I got to buy it cheap because I can only afford it based on the money I've got in my bank account. Well, I don't look at the money in the bank account. I look at the money in the house and I speak to the person. It's kind of like a doctor. Somebody wants to sell a house.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry, Kevin, can I just stop you there? Yeah. I wouldn't like you to be anyone's doctor.
Oh, right, yeah. If somebody was a doctor, right, and they've got a pain in their stomach, and you go to the doctor and say, I've got a pain in my stomach, and the doctor says, it's appendix, let's take them out. And I'm like, whoa, it's just a bit of indigestion. It's the same thing when I meet somebody and they go, I got a viewing on Thursday. I'm going to try and do vendor finance, or I'm going to do a lease option. No, you're not. You're going to fact find. You're going to go to a viewing. You're going to speak to the owner. You're going to fact find. You're deciding it's appendix when it might be indigestion. You need to solve the problem. And we're too eager to get the keys. And we're too eager to, that's the price, buy it cheap. When actually, you haven't solved the problem. And that's why you end up mainly getting rejected.
And is that...
So a lease option...
I'll just jump in there, Lisa. Just one question around that, Kevin. Suppose what you're doing there is you're using a sales tactic really on just finding out exactly. You're being a wee bit nosy, as they say in Ireland, just even more investigative about things.
You're chatting to the owner, Pork, like they're your mate down the pub. Most people walk in, they'll walk in with a clipboard or something and they'll go, there's damp hair, there's this hair, I don't like the tiles, I don't like the walls, oh, that'll have to go. And they chose all that stuff. That's their house. They chose that stuff. You've walked into their home and you've beaten them up saying, I don't like your carpets, I don't like your walls, that needs redoing, that's going to be ripped out, and here's a shitty low offer. Well, they hate you before you make the offer. I walk in, I chat to them like the guy down the pub. You know, like somebody down the pub says to you, I'm looking to sell my house. Okay, well, tell me why you're selling, where you're moving, have a conversation, and we solve their problem.
Yeah, and I do get that from time to time in one of the networking groups that that I'm in as well. And you get some investors and he's selling, and you know, mightn't be able to sell, but it's having the confidence to ask those questions. Well, tell me more, and then you get into the old mortgage side of it, and people just go, oh, that's too much information. You know, I'm not going to tell you that. How do you get over those types of aspects? Now, this is, I suppose, I'm digging into questions here. It comes with practice, obviously, comes with a wee bit of training, but is there any wee nuggets you can give me there?
Yeah, so in 2013, I couldn't negotiate my way out of a plastic bag. I'd never done it before. I know I only look about 22. You probably can't see this on the podcast, but I couldn't negotiate my way out of a plastic bag. I was 35 years old. I had never negotiated a property deal in my life apart from one that I just bought and was a disaster. So it's a learned skill. But here's what happens, Pork. People are trying to get rich quick. Eh? They want to get rich quick. So what do? They'll try it once, go, I tried that, it didn't work. And then they quit. And they move from the next get rich quick to the next, and they end up broke. It's about practice. One thing every single day. And you'll get to where you need to get to. And I don't look at trying to win a deal. Some people in negotiation, they're pushing too quickly to get the question answered. Well, I'll do three meetings if I have to, because they're trying to get the deal on their first meeting because everything's a rush now. The world's moving too quick. Everything's a rush. This house, I viewed this house the first time last July. In October, we agreed a deal. In February, we renegotiated the deal, and then we moved in. So it's different.
I think I know someone who's a wee bit like that now, right, Lisa?
Lisa.
Yeah. We just had a chat. We had a chat about that
yesterday. But that's good as well. That's good as well, because I got a lot of students, and Lisa came over from Ireland to the UK, and she literally wanted the results immediately. But that means sometimes you got to slow those people down. But actually, she went out and she smashed it. While other people, they got to get all their ducks in a row. And they never get started because they're procrastinating. And it's about the balance in between the two.
What I learned from your course, Kevin, was I did try a lease option. And I've actually just done a vendor finance, just done a 10-bed HMO there lately. It's about finding the motivated sellers. So I suppose where a lot of people are coming with this is they just wait for the house to go on the market with just say like the likes of D&G, Sherry Fitzgeralds. And then there's more, it's hard when the house is advertised with an estate agent, because it means that everybody knows it's for sale, and it's a pretty hot market at the moment. So there could be, you know, three or four, and it's like a bidding war. How can you get yourself in front of a vendor without having so much competition so that you can explain some of these solutions?
It's very easy to find the owner of a house. Very easy, especially as an Irish person, because we talk to everybody. It's like you knock on the neighbor's door. You speak to somebody in the pub who owns that house. It's easy to find the owner of a house. In England, there's loads of systems. You can go on land registry and you can download title deeds and you can post letters. You post a letter in the mail. If they've got diverted post, it'll go to where they live. You'll find the owner. People come up with excuses. They don't even try. They go, oh, but nobody lives there. Right, so knock on the neighbor's door. You know, ask the guy in the pub. Ask somebody down the street. Go into the local supermarket. You'll find out who the owner of a house is by asking a few people. And you'll either make excuses or make money, but you ain't making both. It's one or the other, right? You'll find the owner. There's loads of ways to find the owner. If I said to somebody right now that people lack motivation. If I said to them, your whole family is in the middle of a lake surrounded by sharks, and if you don't find the owner of that house by tomorrow morning, they're all going to get eaten by sharks. Oh, they'll find the owner then. But most people will give up a little bit of hard work for a year or two.
So what you're saying, Kevin, is find a vacant
working hard for somebody else.
Yeah, so find a vacant property, basically, and go look for the owner of that vacant property.
Just vacant. Yeah, it doesn't have to be vacant, but the vacant one's the hardest to find. The non-vacant one's easy. The owner just knock on the door. They're probably behind the door. That's easy. The vacant one's the hard one. How do you find the owner? Knock on the door, but that's uncomfortable. But so is success. Success is uncomfortable. If you never leave your comfort zone, you'll never get truly comfortable. The irony of that is people stay in their comfort zone and never get financially comfortable.
Can I just, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of news about, you know, the property crisis in Ireland and in the UK and Northern Ireland as well. But there's one fact, and it is a fact, that there's over 130,000 vacant properties there at the minute in Ireland. 130,000. That's the latest census that is taken back to 2022. I know they're trying to bring some of them back in, and you know the Irish government are doing things. In Northern Ireland, I think it's 25,000. You know, so there's
huge.
There's so much, and the rhetoric is negative towards property and towards industry. You know, quite a lot. Like, you know.
There will be, but people blame landlords for the housing crisis. The reality is the landlords don't need high house prices. The government do. Higher house prices means higher capital gains tax, higher stamp duty, and higher inheritance tax. Lower prices for a landlord and lower rents with lower mortgage payments means same profit. Yeah? The only reason the rents are high is because interest rates are high and house prices are high. If you brought down the interest rates, brought down the house prices, and brought down the rents, the profit would be the same because the profit is rent minus mortgage. But if you move them all down, I don't, as an investor, I don't want high house prices. Why? I got to pay more for the next one. I want low house prices. And people blame landlords for a housing crisis. Well, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of houses for sale in the UK, and owner occupiers can't buy them. And most investors can't buy them. But because of interest rates and everything else. But the government, and you think about this, especially in the UK, I don't know what about Ireland specifically for this one, but in 2020 during the lockdown, inheritance tax, stamp duty, and capital gains tax, the government, when they should have been worrying about people losing lives, got rid of stamp duty to keep the housing market inflated because they wanted to do a tax grab on capital gains tax and inheritance tax because the elderly were dying. I mean, what do we do? The elderly are dying. Well, let's get rid of stamp duty because we don't want a housing crash. Because if there's a good opportunity to bring in some capital gains tax and inheritance tax, let's get rid of stamp duty, artificially inflate the market, have a big tax grab, and then blame the landlord.
Are you interested in property investing, but you don't know where to start? You don't have the time, you don't have the knowledge, and, well, you know you think you should be. Well, Padraig and Lisa from the Solid Foundations Property Podcast is here to help. If you have a question or if you want to get some guidance on your investment journey or even get on the property ladder, Padraig and Lisa can help you out. If it's investing in Northern Ireland or investing in the Republic of Ireland, do check out the show notes and you will get their details there.
Okay.
So what? So Kevin, right? Today, in today's market price, well, in Ireland anyway, prices are high. They're kind of they're staying high. They didn't really take a fall, even though we've had these interest rate increases. I suppose more so because we have this kind of housing crisis. So what do you think? Should we buy? Should we hold? Should we stop buying at the moment? What should we do right now in the
Buy.
current climate?
Buy. Supply and demand.
Buy.
House prices are expensive. I've been in property 20 years. I thought house prices were expensive in 2002 in Grays in Essex in the UK when I moved over. And I bought in Bulgaria, Estonia, and Turkey off plan with a bit of a small down payment because it was too expensive in the UK. Those houses today are 4 to 5 times more expensive than what I thought was expensive at the time. 2007 crash in Ireland and the UK, the markets crashed because house prices were expensive. 2007's expensive is 2024's cheap. And 2024's expensive. 2024's expensive. If you chucked yourself in a time machine and went forward to 2050, 2024's expensive will be 2050's cheap. 2050, house prices will be higher. Why? Because wages always go up, right? Inflation always goes up. The cost of everything always goes up. Money devalues over time. Since they delinked gold from the fiat currency in 1972 or whatever the last one went in America, the dollar and a piece of gold were equal. Now the gold is about $2,500, 2,500 higher since 1972. Why? Because money devalues over time. Money sitting in a bank account, it devalues and devalues and devalues. And here's why you should buy property and buy debt, because the wealthiest people on this planet are the ones with the most good debt. The poorest are the ones trying to get out of debt. The wealthy are getting into debt. Why? Because the inflation erodes money. Inflation also erodes debt. I know that my properties, I owe 10 odd million quid to banks at the moment. But in 2050, 10 million quid won't be worth as much money as 10 million quid is today. In the year 2000, 10 million quid was like huge. Today, 10 million quid is not that much. In 2050, it won't be a lot at all because money devalues over time. And this is why most people are trying to save money and they're missing the fact it's getting eroded by inflation. When what they should be doing is acquiring good debt, and it will always go up. And my kids and your kids and your grandkids will benefit way more from it than we will because it'll have burned so much by the next generation. But a wise man once said, invest in property, they're not building much more of it, or invest in land, they're also not building the property. So just to bring never a bad time to buy.
Just to bring you back on a point. Back on a point there, Kevin, you know, suppose I was one of those individuals back in 2004. I think it was, I was 20, what age was it? 23 or 24. Then I bought a property, 100% mortgage, bought it in Sligo town. And, you know, some of those areas haven't come out of that. There's still negative equity, some of those areas, you know. And suppose what you're saying is buying, but buying with your investment hat on or your head on.
Yes.
From that point of view.
So I spent 5 years in Sligo. I went to IT Sligo, so I spent 5 years there. So I was like, I was a blow-in. I was an amateur in 2003, 4, 5, same as you. And what happened was I bought stuff that's still in negative equity. But a professional buys value. There's never a bad time to buy so long as you know what you're doing. And the problem is most people speculate. I'll give you an example, Pork, Bitcoin. It happens with everything. Bitcoin goes crazy, right? Bitcoin's worth nothing. Bitcoin goes crazy. Warren Buffett once said, if a taxi driver in New York tells you which stock to buy, sell. Too late. Bitcoin, as soon as the media get hold of it, media go, oh, Bitcoin, this is the big thing. So everybody piles into Bitcoin. And the price tanks. Why? Because all the professionals sold the amateurs getting in. And then it dropped back down to 13 grand. This happened 2020 when everybody started getting into it. It dropped back down to 13 grand because all the amateurs, the get rich quickers, they all panicked, sold again. All the professionals bought back in at 13 grand. Now it's gone back up again. Once it hit about 35 grand, all the amateurs started piling in again to try and ride the gravy train up. And now it's gonna crash again, and they'll all get caught again, because there's a saying as well that you see who's been swimming with the sharks when the tide goes out, because they never valued the education of understanding what to do, and they hop on at the wrong time. But property, there's not the right or wrong time to buy property. There's just the right property to buy at any time.
So, Kevin, you taught us well when it comes to raising private investor money, private lenders. So what about those time-poor, cash-rich people with money sitting in their bank who doesn't necessarily want to become a landlord themselves because, there are lots of duties, especially in Ireland, when it comes to being a landlord. So for those people who have a lot of money sitting in their bank and they're obviously not earning any interest on it, loaning out to the likes of, say, these property investors, is that risky? And should people be doing that? What's your suggestions on this?
So it depends. Is it risky? Some people have time and some people have money. Both of them need knowledge, because the person with the money needs the knowledge of understanding what they're doing with their money. So somebody could give Joe Bloggs 200 grand. But how do they know that Joe Bloggs is the right person to give the 200 grand to? Because they don't know what a good deal is. So even if you're going to lend your money, you should still need to know what a deal is. You should still understand the deal. You might not have the time to find the deal. You might have not the time to refurb the deal, but you should at least make the time to understand what a deal is. Because otherwise, what do you know? Majority of people on this planet, the reason they don't become wealthy and they've all earned money is because they give their money to somebody else. A broker, a financial broker, you know, the stocks and shares broker who manages your money until you're broke, the broker. Because most people rely on somebody else to give them a return and never learned how to do it. Outside of that, if you've got money in the bank, you're a crazy person to leave it in the bank because it's getting destroyed by inflation. You're sitting there. I've got a saying, money, when you hoard it, it's like shit. Yeah, it stinks. But when you spread it round, it grows. You got to spread it round. So a person with money should be spreading their damn money around and letting it grow. You'll get a better return on your money if you lend it to somebody. But you don't lend it on a handshake. You don't lend it. Oh, Kevin McDonald said I should lend my money. So I lent my money to some bloke that I met at a networking event. Can't remember their surname. He promised me that he'd give it back to me. I don't have any contract. No, I didn't say that. I said, know what you are doing. Lend your money in the right way. You'd be crazy to keep your money in a bank account. It's getting burned by inflation. The bank, by the way, whether you like it or not, your money is in property. See, if you're leaving your money in a bank account, getting 0.0% on it, I'm walking into that bank and I'm borrowing your money at 5 or 6%, and I'm making 25% on it. So why don't you make the 25% on it? Why don't you lend it to somebody who's in property? Lisa's in property. Why don't you lend it to Lisa and give her the money, but give it on a proper first charge contract, joint venture with her, whatever it may be, and get the 20 to 25% or the 10% plus minimum. But don't leave it in the bank getting 0.0. So some property investor comes along and borrows it at 5 or 6% and makes the 20% on it themselves. Your money is in property, whether you like it or not. Yeah, but maybe it's time that you came into property as well. I'm not talking to you, Lisa and Pork. I'm talking to the world that's listening to this. Whether you like it or not, your money is in bricks and mortar. It ain't in the bank account. So should you put your money into property? Irony is, your money is already in property. It's just that you're not.
And one last thing I want to tell the listeners as well. I know, Pork, you need to, you're looking to get off now, but I just want to tell the listeners something you taught me, Kevin, about good debt and bad debt. So when I started coming to Progressive, I always had this really decent car. It would always be, you know, I'd always spend big money on a car every 2 or 3 years. It was like 50 grand car, 60 grand, whatever it was. Every 2 years I'd upgrade. And you said to me, Lisa, sell the car, get your 50 grand back, put it towards a property, and then use it as a down payment towards a property or a refurb or whatever it is for a property, and then use the money from the house to then lease the car back and use that for as lease payment. And that's exactly what I did. I sold the at the time, I think it was an Audi Q5. I got 45 grand back for it, and that's exactly what I did. And now I've got a better car, but it's actually you know, purchased through a lease option. So a depreciating asset is purchased via, is not purchased. I don't actually own it. You know, I'm using it from the proceeds or the profit from a house that I do own that will go up in value in the long term. So that was a nugget from yourself there, Kevin, about 2 years ago.
Poor people spend their money buying depreciating assets. Wealthy people buy an asset to pay for the asset, to pay for the depreciating one. I get people on social media come to me and they go, oh, he doesn't even own his car. I checked it out. It's a lease car. Yeah, because poor people buy cars. Poor people buy cars. Wealthy people, we buy a property and we lease the car.
And what is it, a Porsche? Like, it's a couple hundred quid a month to, for the repayments, or maybe more, but, you know, even still to raise that. Kevin, there's so much knowledge there. It's frightening, I suppose. What we get a lot of new listeners to our podcast, and I suppose the Irish property podcast scene isn't massive, so Solid Foundations is probably, I'd say, the first, is it, Lisa? The first. So for people kind of going, right, I need to take a step here, what's your first thing for them to do?
Depends what they want to do. If they want to invest in property deals, find trustworthy people who they can invest with. I can vouch for people like Lisa Porrick. If you're working with Lisa, I'll vouch for you too, because I don't know you that
Thank
well.
You.
But even if I vouch for you guys, here's what I would do. Anybody who's lending money, I wouldn't lend money to my granny unless I had a proper contract. So even so, you still have the contract, all that stuff. Outside of that, if you want to learn about property, then reach out and learn off somebody about how to do property. I coach people, I mentor people, follow me on social media. I do videos all the time. Watch them. Just watch podcasts, listen to podcasts, read YouTubes. There's loads of free content out there. You don't have to go straight in and get a mentorship with somebody. There's loads of free content. Learn a little bit about it. Figure out if actually property is something you want to do. And then if it is something you want to do, get yourself a mentor. But you can figure out whether you actually want to do property or not just from free content. And if you decide you don't. Do something else. Don't rely on the job. But if you decide you do, then there's two choices. You do it with somebody else where you use your money and their knowledge, or you gain the knowledge and then you access the money. There's just two routes, but it comes from a decision. Anybody can do it. What most people don't do is make the decision, because is property easy? No. What's easy? It's easier to not bother trying. That's all.
I completely agree with you. It's, you know, you see a lot of people go to some of these training courses and they're not doing anything, because it's easy not to do anything. It's easy not to put yourself out there, sending out 100 letters through letterboxes to try and get the deals, or, you know, social media kind of. So I suppose, look, I came over. The biggest thing that I learned from you, Kevin, was that putting myself out there on social media. before I wouldn't have shared anything on social media. And I was really like, you would like, no, if you want to do this full time, you do have to put yourself out there. And it was something that I had to start doing. So I started kind of really focusing on LinkedIn and Facebook and doing lives and videos and posts. And it was really out of my comfort zone, but it would have been so much easier not to do it. Now I have to say that sometimes I get myself in a place where I'm like, I just can't be bothered to go on social media anymore. And it's the first thing that I would do is I would stop it. But as soon as you stop that type of stuff, you know, deals are not coming your way, the finance is not coming your way, and it does all dry up. So it's all about like who know, not necessarily who you know, it's who knows you know. And yeah, I learned that. I definitely learned that from yourself.
Awesome. No, I know as well. I've been 45 odd minutes late for this because I've been at a busy day. And so I'm happy, obviously, Pork needs to get away. I can come on do another episode of one of these sometime in the future if you like. A longer edition, a shorter edition, break it into whatever. I just like talking about property. So,
yeah, no, there's no kicking at the door at the minute. They're looking for me to go to soccer. So I'm hoping they're away. Someone's going to have to bring them. But anyway, it's, as I say, you have such a busy time as well, moving house. So we really appreciate your time, Kevin. And it's always good to connect with the Irish in England. And as I say, bringing you back to that journey, suppose you're back in the UK since 2002, roughly, was it?
Mm. Yeah, and 14th of May 2002. I'll never forget it.
And was it the construction aspect that got you thinking about property, or what was it really that set the scene?
It was, I moved from, I got a job. I was, what, a friend of mine was home from London one weekend in Swinford in Mayo and said, I can get you a job in London if you want a job in London. Because I was a bit annoyed, I won't say with who, of the job I was in. It was a bit like, I didn't really like the job. I was making concrete cubes. Great company, but shit job. So I thought, they said, I'd get you a job in London. And I thought, no, I just said in the pub, oh yeah, whatever. And then about a month later, they said, I got you an interview. And I'm like, I was fucking, it was a passing. So I thought, I'll do the interview. Then I did the interview and I got the job. And then I went, oh, fucking hell. So anyway, apologies for the Irish, slipped out, but I'm on an Irish podcast again.
Yeah.
So I moved to England and I told them I didn't really want the job. So I said, well, I'm not really going to take it because I don't know where to stay. And they said, well, we'll put you up on accommodation. So they put me up in this shared house. And that was the first time I'd started to kind of realize in England, they're called houses of multiple occupation and licensed HMOs. And I'm there with five other people I work with. But one of them was a lad called William from South Africa. I was about to give you a surname, but I won't, Potter. Oh, too late. William was in the house and William was buying property in South Africa. So he had come from South Africa to London. He had bought six properties in South Africa with the money he was making in London. And he got me interested in property. But unfortunately, in my silly brain, he was buying property abroad, so I decided to buy property abroad. So I bought in Turkey, Bulgaria, and Estonia, except he was South African buying in South Africa. I was Irish buying in places I didn't understand, signing contracts I couldn't read. So that was my first introduction to property. I guess if I never met him, I'd never have lost all that money. But if I never lost all that money, I'd never have had to learn how to be creative, which means I'd never have learned how to do no money down. And then when I came to Progressive in 2013, I heard about rent to rent, which was renting a property off a company and renting to other people. I now rent rooms out to companies in houses I don't even own, where their staff live in them like I used to live in one 20 years ago. And had that, I not done those moves, I wouldn't have linked it together that that's what was actually happening. So everything I always say on this on one point is everything bad that ever happens to you, it's because there's a lesson in it for you.
Mm. I think so. And you know, the HMOs, so you touched on HMOs, and that's a strategy that I more or less solely focus on. I've got a couple of Airbnbs, but it's mainly HMOs. We're in a housing crisis in Ireland at the moment. And in Ireland, I suppose we just assume that HMOs are for students. Who's going to share a house with someone? Only students would share a house. But actually, it's not the case. Number one, we're in a housing crisis. Two, it's very cost effective for someone. And we're getting a lot of people actually come to Ireland to work. And when they come over to Ireland to work, they don't have the network, you know, and actually it's actually nice for them. It's comforting for them to be living with like-minded people. So what do you think to HMOs? Is it a flying fad, and when they start building more houses, that HMOs will be gone? Or
so, hey, HMOs, I've got of 200 plus HMO rooms. A lot of people, it's a negative perception from the 70s that HMO rooms are these squalid bed sits where you've got like no furniture and they look like a prison cell. Not that I know what a prison cell looks like, but the HMO rooms can be nicer than homes. They've got en suites, they can have kitchenettes, they've got feature walls, you put plants in. They're nice. They're certainly nicer than that wall behind me because I haven't had a chance to paint it yet because I'm a new house. But they're, so there's these, I hope the previous owner's not listening to that. It's a lovely wall. HMO rooms can be beautiful today. You can have everything in your bedroom. You can have a shared communal space. It's not a fad. It's going to be the future. And people don't like the word HMO because it's got this negative connotation. So they call it a co-living now in the UK, which is just a HMO, but it's a posh name for a HMO, co-living. Co-living spaces, whatever you want to call it. It's not a fad. It's going to be bigger and bigger and bigger. People are going to move to smaller and smaller and smaller sizes of accommodation over the future. And HMO rooms are here to stay. And so long as you provide nice quality accommodation, you'll always have tenants.
Yeah, we just finished one last week. The interior design was in. A designer was in, you know. And I was
That's
going.
It.
I never, no. When I was a student, I never lived in anything like this, you know.
Yeah, I tried it actually. I tried when I first started doing HMOs, I didn't put much money into them. I assumed that it's only going to be kind of like blue collar workers, I'm not going to get much money for the room, so I didn't put much money into them. And lo and behold, yes, I didn't get much like. I'm getting guaranteed rent from my corporate clients, but yeah, I'm not getting as much. And then the last couple, I've decided to go more higher end. And yeah, like it's easier to fill the room. I've got less voids and I'm getting a lot more than what I would get, say, for a lower end one. So yeah, I think the trick is to go more higher end.
Hmm. Pork, I've got a question for you. You just said you had your interior designer in, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
Did you get an interior designer for your own home?
No, not yet.
We did.
I'll tell you one of the reasons why, because of the network. One of the guys who are partners with us, and they was giving out, you know, some figures around, you know, the rental aspect you can achieve higher with as Lisa was pointing out. And I just thought, you know, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. You know, it's my first one. And to be fair, it was a stretch because it wasn't really in the budget. It was kind of an afterthought, really. And you're going, okay, all those little details, I don't have that personal touch, you know. So, and I think, you know, if you start off the way you mean to go on with things, look, definitely. It helps with management and actual maintenance down the line if you do it right. But the interior design thing aspect of it, you know, I was blown away by some of the, you know, the flip prices and even the rental yields that people were getting because they actually cared a little bit more and a little bit more creative, as you were saying, Kevin.
But here's the thing, people have a go at landlords, and like there's rogue landlords, don't get me wrong, but there's rogue car dealers, there's rogue shopkeepers, there's rogue plumbers and rogue electricians. Of course there's rogue landlords, but there's also good landlords. And landlords get a bad name all the time, and it really pisses me off because there's the rogue landlord and there's a good landlord. And those that do interior design, we don't interior design our own homes, but we interior design the tenant's house. They live in better, many of my students' tenants live in nicer houses than the students. Many of my tenants live in nicer properties because they live in, they're not damp, they're not dingy, they're not insect infested, they're not what the media portrays. Most of the stuff the media portrays are council houses where the councils don't do up the properties, not the landlord. And the reason I coach and I mentor is to create more good landlords, because you can sit back and moan about the problem. But actually, or you can be part of the solution. And the solution is to create more good landlords. The solution is to create more good investors, more investors that care, to increase the housing standards, to increase the quality of living for people, not have the rogue landlords only. So if you have an issue with anything in life, you can moan about the issue, you're part of the problem, or you can create the solution. There's only two places.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely we definitely get a bad media in Ireland, and I think it's been kind of exaggerated by the fact that there's no houses to rent in Ireland, and what we have over here as well, and I suppose I don't think you have it yet in the UK, but we have rent caps. So what the rent caps have done in Ireland is, even if you make it nice and get your interior designer in, you can't increase the rent from what was charged the last time. So you can only increase it by 2% per year. 2% is nothing, you know. So what's happened is it makes it hard, right? Because in a free market, a nice room should attract nice rent, and a dingy, crappy room should attract crappy rents, right? And that is the free market. But because of these rent caps and because of all the regulations in Ireland, a crappy, dingy house could actually achieve higher rents if it's never been rented before, because they can set the new market rate at the brand new rate. And on the flip side, if someone is in has a crappy property but decides to do it up for the tenant, they can't increase the rent by more than 2%. So rent caps have actually now, it was brought in a couple of years ago as a way to kind of protect tenants from higher rents, from landlords kind of increasing the rents. But now actually it's turned back on itself, and it's actually brought rents overall higher because people are getting around it from with different ways and that, you know. So rent caps just, in my mind, just don't work, and
Yeah,
it's
but of
we're
course
seeing
they
it
work.
now.
But they did. It's ridiculous. They tried it slightly. This is because we've got politicians who don't understand business. I got into a TikTok argument with Nadine Dorries, who's an MP in the UK, and she said, landlord, I said landlords are needed to solve the housing crisis. Needed to solve the housing crisis. I just bought a cinema off the council. We're converting it to 21 apartments. The council owned it for 10 plus years. Why did they not convert it? Yeah. So landlords are needed. And she says, no, land. She says, no. I said, lower rents are needed. And I said, no. She says, sorry. I said, landlords are needed. She says, no, the house, more housing is needed. I said, yeah, but the government need to incentivize landlords to build more houses. Landlords and investors to build more houses. And she said, no, landlords need to reduce rents. And I said, well, the bit I said earlier is landlords would be happy with reduced rents if the house prices were less and the mo interest rates were less. And then she said, I said, the government are charging a fortune on capital gains, et cetera, all the tax. I listed a bunch of taxes. And she says, you have the opinion that a government is meant to make money when actually it makes a loss. And I said, well, actually, a government should be run like a business and should make a profit. And it's mismanagement of government is the reason it doesn't make a profit. Now, I know the Irish government makes a profit. It's even worse over here, guys, by the way, because corporation tax is 25%. In Ireland, it's 12%. They could say, oh, well, corporation tax go higher, you'll solve the problem, but the problem's worse. 12% corporation tax, it doesn't matter what the tax is in either country. What matters is the government not understanding what they're doing, because they don't understand what they do is they bring in these laws to try and have Fine Gael beat Fianna Fáil, and it's all a voting match to see who wins a vote. And they've gone so far away from actually solving the problem that the problem gets bigger. So they bring rent caps in. They're never going to work. They brought it in Scotland, rent caps. And what it was slightly different, Ireland, it was if you were living in a house, you weren't allowed to increase the rent or that a little amount. So now, note, but if you had an empty one, you could set the rent wherever you liked. So not only now were the landlords setting a higher rent for the empty one, the tenant that wanted to leave a tenanted property couldn't leave. Let's say a boyfriend and girlfriend decide to separate. They'll live together in a rented property for 400 quid a month because they can't afford to leave it because the rent for the similar property is 700 a month. So they'll stay where they were because there's no rent cap. The rent cap was only on the tenanted one. And it created a major rent rise in Scotland. Ridiculous. So the government create this solution to win a vote, and then they don't understand the impact of the solution, and it all goes to shit.
Yeah,
So they, and the answer is, by
Kevin
the way,
for
we've moaned about
the
this.
government.
Kevin
No,
will be running the local Greys
I would
Council.
never be in politics. I'd never go into politics because they're stupid. But you'd never win. You'd never. You'll never win. You can moan about it all you like. You'll never win. And if you're moaning about the government, I want the government to change. I want the prime minister to change, or the Taoiseach to change, or you know what? If this changes, I'll be better off. Or if that changes, I'll be better off. No, if you change, you'll be better off. The change you want to see has to come from within. You need to be the change that you want to see. It's not going to change unless you be the change you want to see. No government will change it for you. No neighbor, no boss, no nothing. You got to take control of your own financial future.
Love it, Kevin. Well, love it.
That's a fantastic way to end today's podcast. You need to be your own change, and that is so true. Kevin MacDonald, it's been a fascinating hour or so talking. We could talk for another hour, couldn't we, Lisa?
Yeah, definitely. But I know you got to get off for it. That soccer camp is not going to wait for anyone.
Soccer and Gaelic tomorrow, hopefully, you know. So it's all fun.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, Kevin, thanks a million for coming on, and we would really love for you to come back on again another day, and I'd be able to grill you maybe on some other strategies that you do. If that'd be something you'd be interested in, we'd love to have you back on at some stage.